What if I told you you could be anywhere you want to be in just 3 years? It's true. By staying hyper-focused on your goals and purpose, you can make your vision a reality in just a few short years or even sooner. The trick is, you have to build the routine that will support you in getting there. The good news, we've already done the hard part for you. We created a free 5-minute morning routine tailored specifically to you. It's delivered straight to your inbox each morning, is designed to help you supercharge your mornings with clarity, focus, and inspiration. By committing to this 5-minute routine daily, you'll create total clarity on your purpose and goals, inspiration to help you build a lasting habit, and the life that you want in just 3 years. The best part, this tool is totally free. No strings attached, just valuable resources to help your inner and outer growth. So if you're looking for a short, easy morning routine that will help you, one, stay laser focused on your vision you have for your life, and two, help you make progress towards that vision every single day, head to adamhergenrother.com/future or visit the link in the show notes to create your future self today. Hey everybody, I'm Adam Hergenrother. This is Business Meets Spirituality. We believe in personal growth through business success. I am joined by my chief of staff, Hallie. Hallie, how are you today?
I'm great. How about you?
We love the whole concept of investing into ourselves. So today we're going to be diving into, how do you decide what to invest into? How much money to do? What are the kind of goals of average percentages to kind of put into some sort of bucket or real estate or 401k, regardless of how much money you have. But before we do that, I think one of the most important things to kind of recognize is the biggest asset that you can ever bring to yourself is what, Hallie?
Education and training?
Yes. Investing into yourself.
Investing into yourself. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And this morning I was just saying, I went to go do for an 8-mile bike ride with, or 8-mile run. And my kids were up at 4:30 this morning, which was odd. I don't know if it's the sun or the change of the time right now.
Yeah,
they had a whole bunch of energy in the morning. They're just rolling. And so I'm like, you guys are going to get out. So you know what? Actually, here's a side tip for this. We have limited our kids' time on their iPad. However, we did that before, then we kind of cheated a little bit, to be honest. Like, we weren't the best parents of like holding the line to that.
During COVID?
Yes, during COVID, all those things. And we really got strict with this about a couple weeks ago. And what's fascinating is it's after 2 days of them realizing that we weren't going to budge on this anymore, they just shut off. They shut off their iPads. Man, they've been budgeting their time so wisely now. Like, they'll come down and Asher will be like, I'm setting my timer for 20 minutes. Like, he set my timer for 20 minutes. He'll shut his iPad off and go, I have an hour and 40 minutes left, because they get 2 hours no matter what they're doing. Even my wife and I, Sarah, we've been talking about this. She's like, it's a whole shift. They're managing their own time. They're managing themselves kind of with it. So anyways, they were up early and they both watched the iPad for like half an hour. I went to go do my run. And they're like, I'm like, why don't you guys bike with me? It's 35 degrees, but it's sunny, it's warm. Mm-hmm. That feels good for Vermont right now.
35 feels like summer.
Yeah, it does. Right, it does. And they jumped on their bike. And so our, my 8-mile ride turned into about a 4.5 with like 7 stops, but it was wonderful because they got out and they biked for like 40 minutes and it was awesome. And it was super fun. However, the whole point of telling that story was we were climbing this hill in the back. And I'm like, okay, guys, you got it. This is a big hill. And they're like, I don't want to do this hill. And I'm like, you can do this. I'm like, just give you a little burst, count to 10 and kind of work your way through this. Don't let your mind kind of grab you. And so at the end of it, they made it. And Asher was like, yeah, I didn't do 10. I counted to 8. And I really worked my mind. And it's like, I just use that as like, there's always a whole bunch of ways to work on yourself and invest into yourself, right? And so when we're talking about the best asset that you can have is to invest into yourself, it doesn't always have to be with money. I think there's a lot of ways. So when we're talking about investing actual dollars, well, I believe wholeheartedly, I mean, I borrowed $8,000 to start my first business, and $4,000 or 50% I used to go to a real estate conference. And that's how I started my career. So I'm much more at risk to use money to invest in myself. However, I think it's really important that if the most important thing to do is to invest into yourself, you may not have the money to do that. If you don't, there's a tremendous amount of ways to invest into yourself for free, right? I mean, I think last year we had 100 free courses that we did or something along those lines.
Yeah, there's so much free content out there, and I'm like, you know, going to the library and getting a book,
yes,
borrowing a book from somebody, I mean, that's how I get most of my information. Yeah, you were from reading.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's why, you know, Warren Buffett reads, you know, 8 to 9 hours a day in his heyday. I think he's down to 6 hours because of his time. The guy's 90 to run this company. Mark Zuckerberg talks about how he read. Steve Jobs, you know, Bill Gates, if you watched his documentary, which I know you did, like he carries around 12 books with him at all times, yeah. Right? I know those guys have money to invest, but really what they're doing, they're reading. So you don't need billions of dollars to do that. My point is, like, you always want to invest in yourself first, because that's, you're investing in yourself is going to give you the biggest return on anything that you're doing. So don't, we're going to now transition to actually investing dollars, but Hallie and I want to make that point that you first need to invest in yourself, and it doesn't require money. What it requires is discipline and time.
Yeah. And I was going to say, sometimes you need to know when to spend the money.
Yes.
Like if you need a certification, I think the story that you told me of your dad was a really great example of how he invested into himself to get a different skill set so that he could change careers.
Yeah, it was a first taste of kind of seeing entrepreneurship in my family. And that's, my dad has 9 brothers and sisters, and pretty much all of them are in, well, not all of them, 7 out of 9 of them are in some sort of entrepreneurship role, which is kind of fascinating. And my dad was working at IBM nights, and he, when I was probably 14 or so, 15, maybe a little bit younger, and he got like a year-long certification for like drafting and architecture to figure out how to build houses. And he was a sole proprietor, and that's kind of been his MO since. But he was working a job, vested into a certification to be able to do it, because that was required of it to be able to do it, and then start building. And then he was working, building, so he was doing the building of one-off houses, you know, all while he had another job to build up cash flow, because we didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. And so that's just kind of how we did it and be able to do it. You're right. But there does come a time too when you have the availability. So the point we want to make is you don't need money to invest in yourself, because sometimes people go, well, I don't have any extra money. I hear that sometimes. I don't have any extra money to invest in myself. And I'm going, we live in a time now that information is so readily available for free everywhere. So don't use that as an excuse. What you're saying is, I don't want to stop and actually invest into myself.
Yeah.
So most important is invest into yourself. Then as you start earning money, that's why in our coaching company, we have different levels of people. You have a $200 option to, you know, up to $5,000-$10,000 option, depending on where you are and what you want to do and what your goals are. You also, I think it's important to start in the beginning, if you have a little extra money to do it, to start realizing that to invest into yourself, what the return is. So maybe you take $100 a month to invest into yourself, right? And maybe that could be a personal trainer, if that's your thing that you need, right? You know, or whatever that option is to invest into yourself in one of those categories of your life. Inwardly, like you can invest in the TM, right? Transcendental meditation costs money, but you can invest into it, right? So knowing—
And it's a one-time cost.
It's a one-time cost.
That pays—
Yes.
Dividends for the rest of your life.
Exactly. Well, and all of these should, because then you've gained the knowledge. Even if you didn't, you know, you went through a course and you got 5%, that 5% got you in a different direction in your life, could take you out there. Yeah. So the first point that we wanted to make was invest into yourself. It's always going to be the greatest asset, is investing into yourself. You don't need money, and then knowing when to invest money wisely and smartly. And then when you have the ability, you should always be having some sort of your budget in business investing into yourself, some level of coaching or certification or course that you're doing. Now, what we really want to kind of talk about here is when you actually have money, any dollar amount, because we're going to use percentages for this, it doesn't matter how much money you're making, right? The first thing that I think is really important for people to understand, and most people do not spend the time to do this. Well, for one, we just get a tremendous amount of this conversation. I mean, you and I have this conversation for years about like it's really important to understand what your number is. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I don't mean what your number is like, hey, I need $10 million because I heard that's a good number, or I need a certain dollar amount that's coming in there. And we've had this conversation just as we grow an organization, people around me are making a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So you have excess cash to be able to do things with, right? So then like, where do I invest my money? What do I do with it?
Well, I was just going to say that I think it was specifically for me that some of the conversations over the past years have gone from, whether internally or with you, have gone from how can I earn more money? What do I need to do to make more money? Can I go coach? Can I go do this? Can I diversify my income streams? And more recently, they've really gone to how do I create passive income?
Yeah,
it's no longer about I want to just, because I know I can work and make money.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
you can
not
check
the
that
question.
Box.
Yes, yeah. I've done that. I can figure out how
always.
To do that.
Yes.
Always. the next step for me and for a lot of people, I think, is how do I create that passive income so I can build my financial freedom?
Yeah. So that it's a really good difference seeing that earned income that you can make. Because a lot of us can get in that trap like, well, hey, if I just need something else in my lifestyle, I'll just go earn the money to do it.
Especially in the industry that we're in. It's like, I'll just go sell two more homes and I can buy whatever I want.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Which is always you using your time to trade off for money, right? Which is fine. We have to do, there's an application to our life that like we have to, there's a phase in our life that we have to do that, right?
Yes.
However, at some point, you should always be looking at and understanding with you and your partner or your family, sitting down and saying, okay, what is my number? And what most people do, they don't know what their number is. If somebody asked them, I said, how much money do you want? They're going to say $5 million, right?
What is their number for what?
Yeah, I'm getting to that, right? Because Hallie drilled me on this before we got on the call.
But I mean, what is your number? I mean, it could be, what's your Enneagram number?
That's true. What I really mean by what your number is how much money, and I just like to break this down monthly. You can do this annually, but monthly is easier for people to kind of swallow. So what is your monthly number of passive income that's coming in from any source? That could be dividends, that could be 401k, that could be retirement, that could be Social Security, right? All of those things based on where your age and where you're at are going to be sources of income that are coming in without you having to trade hours for it. That's what we mean from that passive income.
Yes.
So what is your financial freedom number to you and your family that's coming in monthly to cover your expenses and cover your lifestyle, right?
So can we just go through this and
absolutely.
Use numbers? Okay. So let's just say it's $10,000.
Okay. Is that after tax or before tax? Big difference.
After.
Okay. So then you may add, let's just use 30% tax bracket. So you need $13,000 a month coming in. So after tax, you should always look at that number. It's a really good point for after tax money, because in 30%, you can know your tax bracket. If it's different, you certainly can apply to whatever it is. But in this case, it's $13,000 coming in, right?
Yes.
$10,000 after tax money coming in every month
to live on.
That could be your mortgage payment. You may not have a mortgage payment. It just may be your travel, but I mean, anything you're doing to live on, right?
Yep.
Now, it's important to know here, you may still be working while you're having this money come in, right? So it doesn't mean you have to just stop working. It just means you have the option of stopping working if you would like to.
Correct. And you can choose what projects you work on or where you show up or whatever.
Exactly. Okay. But you know, that's kind of checking the box. So there's different ways to kind of impact that. The reason why it's really important to know what that monthly financial freedom number is for you and your family is because if you don't, you never got for two things. If you actually get a lot of money and start working on your plan and get there, you're not going to know when you actually hit it. So therefore you'll be chasing your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that in most of our society right now, everyone's chasing for something else. They get money, they chase for something else. They get more, they need more money, they need more of this, instead of actually understanding. Now that number can change over time too, right? It doesn't have to stay stagnant. It just means you need a number for now. So you may start off and saying, hey, if I just had $3,000 a month coming in, you know, in the next 10 years, that would be like a huge benefit. So then you can start building models around, how do I get $3,000 a month coming in, right? That could be buying real estate. That could be investing into a real estate fund or investment into a real estate project. That may be, you know, starting a company that you just remove yourself from, or something that, you know, you can sell digitally. So like a SaaS company, like a software as a service company that's not requiring you to, after you build it, like a book, right?
Mm-hmm.
A book, you build it up. And once you're done with it, it's got a long shelf life and it just ticks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. And it just ticks off the dollars when they come in. Right. So there's a whole bunch of different ways to do this. You could create a training program and get it out there and sell it for years on end. Right. So you just got to first understand what that number is that's coming in and start at something that you go, this would feel really good and feels like it's a little outside my reach, but I'm willing to build a model to go after it. If it's too big and people can't see how they can get there, and it prevents them from actually taking any action, then that's not good. If you want to go big and it's not going to prevent you from taking action, then go ahead and do that. But everyone is different. That's why I give that little carrot in there. Because somebody says, I want $100,000 a month coming in, but right now you have nothing coming in. And they may go, that's just such a big number that it's not even worth me going after. I'll never get there. So then break it down to a smaller number.
Okay, so I'm totally with you on the monthly.
Yes.
Figuring out your monthly number. Then my next question is, we talked about the Mr. Money Mustache podcast. We've talked about, Tony Robbins talks about this too, that they talk about a monthly number, but they also talk about this larger number that is your actually your financial freedom number? How do you determine that number?
Well, once you determine the monthly number, then you can easily go back to the large number. So if you're just doing straight up kind of investment into the stock market or an S&P fund, mm-hmm. and you invest it into companies that's paying a regular dividend, mm-hmm. right? A dividend just means that, just like any company, a company is issuing quarterly distributions to its owners, and you happen to be an owner. And so it may distribute $10 million in that quarter, and you may be an owner and you get $5,000 that quarter, right? So that's just what a dividend is. It's just a company that's paying out its earnings to you. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of companies you can invest into that may not be growing as much, but pay bigger dividends. So you work with your financial advisor on that to figure out what that number is. So if it's $13,000 a month, right. And let's just use, you know, solid math. I mean, I think a safe bet you could have would be like 5% dividend paid annually. There's some that pay more, there's some that pay a little bit less, but I think Mr. Money Mustache used like 4 or 3% as his kind of like dividend that I was going to be paying. I think him and his wife realized that they could live off about $30,000 a year, mm-hmm. is what they wanted to, because they didn't have any of their debt.
Right.
And so he worked for about 10 years, him and his wife, and he woke up one day, and this is kind of the whole Mr. Money Mustache phenomenon, is that he woke up when he was like 36, 37, and they actually stopped working like their normal jobs. He still works a lot, but like
yes.
doing stuff that he wants, their normal engineering or computer science jobs. And they had like $600,000 in your bank. So basically they saved up for that 10 years, they only lived off 30,000. So they're already living off 30,000. They saved everything else. And so they ended up putting that, and they ended up getting about $600,000 or $700,000 in money. And then they were using that as a dividend to pay themselves. So that's kind of how that number works in our scenario. And by the way, he talks a lot about is like, I spend more, because I was really curious about this. Mm. He's like, we lived off $30,000 for a long period of time and our life was incredibly happy. And I spend more now, but my happiness didn't increase at all.
Right.
And it's like, he's like, yes, we spend more money because we have them. Because he's got his books and stuff that he's doing. Mm-hmm. They're making a lot more money now. So he's spending more, but he's like, be very clear. Like it's cash. We're not financing any luxury item, which is important to do.
He's still so intentional about
his choices.
He bases it off of whether or not it will actually increase his joy.
Exactly.
Like his joy meter. I mean, I don't even think he has a car. I think he still bikes everywhere.
Yeah. And what he said, he goes, we could easily afford to go buy any car we want. But he goes, I get much more joy riding my bike to the market than I do anything.
Exactly.
And so that's what he goes. Instead of looking at things like, what can I have? Mm-hmm. I'm always reminded of this in the book, Green Lights with Matthew McConaughey. Mm-hmm. I had my wife read that. She's like, that book was hilarious.
Good.
And where he was, when he first made it big, he was in this house and they had his own like housekeeper. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I came when he was having dinner with one of his friends, and he goes, man, I think I hit this really big now. I'm in this house, He goes, I got somebody taking care of everything, cooking my meals. And he's like, they even pressed my jeans. And the lady looks at him and she's like, unimpressed. And she's like, well, if you like your jeans pressed. And he said, in that moment, he looked up at her and said, holy shit. I don't even like my jeans pressed.
Yeah.
I don't like them pressed. Why are they pressing my jeans? Right. And so he's like, green light, right? Like he was like, in that moment, I realized just because you can doesn't mean you need to or should, because it's not going to increase your joy. So he's like, went back there and no more jeans pressed, right? And like, and so I think people get caught up in the fact that because they have money, they can go buy something. But mm-hmm. like in Mr. Money Mustache, really, if you start factoring in what's going to really bring me joy, and that's how you can start allocating your free cash flow, because life's not stale, right? We talk a lot in this podcast about money's never going to bring you the joy and the fulfillment that you're looking for. But man, if you have it, use it. It's fun. It's go interact with it. There's nothing wrong with any of that. I heard Eckhart Tolle actually talking about this recently, where he said that he lived below the poverty line for many, many years, and his level of joy and enthusiasm was just as high as it was the money that he has now. And he goes, it's great. He goes, I love using money. And he goes, I bought space so people don't bother me. Essentially, I'm just using my own words now, but like, he's like, that was one of the things money could buy, was quietness and peace. And it was a wonderful gift. But he's like, when I didn't have it, I didn't change a way I was feeling. So I think this is a great way of seeing somebody that we consider like spiritual using money to do it. Michael Singer is the same way, right? He built this company up. He didn't change where he's living, but he's got his temple. He funds his stuff that he does there. So there's nothing wrong with money. You don't need it, or if you have it, great, right?
You don't need it, but you can enjoy it.
Enjoy it, exactly. It's kind of like, actually this morning, an individual was talking to me about this exact same conversation, just randomly before we even started doing this, about, you know, hey, I get tripped up sometimes when I see people making money. I know I could spend this money, but should I spend it because I see somebody else having it? I'm like, well, is it going to bring you any joy? I'm like, is that really going to make your life better? And he's like, no. And I said, well, what's going to make your life better? He goes, well, knowing that I have money in the bank. I go, well, exactly right. That's why, like, knowing that you have the ability to have $3,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 a month coming in every month, if you want to, right? You mm-hmm. could, the thing is, if you're in a dividend, you can choose to reinvest your dividends. You can choose to take them. If a company pays a $10,000 dividend that year, you can choose to just reinvest your dividend back into stock options or back into the company. And so just growing your retirement. So there's options are always there for it. And that's kind of setting yourself up for these situations doing it. But if you don't know your number, that number of what's my monthly cash flow that really needs to be, then you're not going to be able to build out your model. Because then going to your annual number, that's how you take your monthly number and you build your annual number.
So how do you... You know, math is not my strong suit. You didn't hire me for my math skills.
I did not, no.
So how do I get to my number from the $13,000 a month?
Sure. I mean, so if you just, if you do $13,000 a month, you know, times, if you just 13,000.
What is the multiple? What do you multiply?
Well, I'm just
by?
Dividing.
Or dividing it by.
So it's basically like $3 million.
Yeah, but can you explain to me and the listeners?
Well, I just took $13,000 a month and divided it by 0.05.
Okay.
And that gave me a monthly amount of cash flow. And then I multiplied that by 12. So what you could also do is you could do 13,000, get the same number, times 12 is 156,000 divided by 0.05 and it's 3,120,000. It's the same number. Okay. So that's all you're doing is you're basically saying I need $3 million in cash to be able to pay to get a 5% dividend. Mm-hmm. And then paying some cash on tax on top of that to be able to have $10,000 there. Yeah. So then you go, okay, that's my $3 million. It's not 100 million. It's not 10 million. It's not 5 million. It's actually not, it's not as big as people think it is.
Yeah,
right?
I think, I can't remember what book it was, but there was one book that they were asking this guy, what does he need? How much money does he need to have this financially free life? And he's like, I need $50 million.
Yeah.
And then they went through this exercise and they...
That's Financial Freedom Mastering the Game with Tony Robbins.
Yes. And then I think he was like, actually you need, I think it was about $3 million. And he was like, oh, okay. I can get there.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so once you know the number, it's 3 million. You could also then start working off this number and you say, okay, mm-hmm. let's say I'm close to getting Social Security. And let's say your Social Security is $3,000 a month. I think my parents' Social Security is like $3,000 because they're in that age right now. They're looking at it. I'm like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you and I, Hallie, are going to get that Social Security, but I don't know, right?
I do look at mine every year.
Yeah, so it's like...
See what I might potentially get.
So like, for instance, let's just take that example of $3,000 a month coming in.
Yeah.
If you have a family, maybe it's $4,000, whatever the number is, let's just use three. So then you say, okay, that's $3,000 a month coming in, right? Certain states tax that, some states don't. So you just figure that out based on the state that you're in. So the $3,000, so then you would reduce that $13,000 by $3,000, right? So now you're at $10,000 before tax.
Yep.
So now what's that new number? It's $120,000 annually divided by 0.05. Now it's 2.4 million. Mm. So you just took off basically $800,000 from the amount of money you need to amass based on what you factor in for Social Security to come in there.
Right.
So now you're down 2.4 million, right?
Right.
So then you might say, well, what if I was able to go out and buy a piece of real estate or invest into real estate. I know, you know, for our organization, for BlackRock, we're offering 13 to 22-25% returns for investors coming into our projects, right?
Which is perfect for people like me who have no desire of actually owning and managing.
Yeah, because it is a pain in the butt
real
to manage
estate,
all
yes.
those things.
Yeah,
yes.
I would way rather let someone else manage that for me.
So instead of a 5% return, these are 13 to 20% returns that you're getting annually. So if you take one and you invested into a residential building that was 15% return, right? Now, so at 15%, let's just say that was, now you've shaved off that delta of 10%. Does that make sense of what it is? But you can see how you can start working backwards through this to see how much cash you need and see what you can actually invest into. So it builds different buckets for you.
And does that also include, or would you recommend that you also put like a timeline to that? Or is there a way to include a timeline on that? So you know, when you hit that number,
if you work with the right advisor and you sit down and say, I want to retire, I want to be able to retire 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever it is.
I told my financial advisor 45.
45. Good. I got 10. we got a decade. But that's the thing, like whatever that number is.
Yeah.
So then you start working backwards. Then you could say, well, you know, just like the calculations I'm doing, the financial advisor is going to do this for you
exactly. In
a much better cohesive manner than how I'm talking about in numbers. You'll be able to see it based on your own situation that you're in. Right.
Right.
And so they're going to go back and saying, well, then you need to save $3,000, $2,000 a month or whatever that number is. And you can say, well, I don't want it all to be in cash. I'm going to go, I like being in real estate, so I'm going to go invest in some real estate, or I want to go, I have these book sales, I'm going to go do this. So you can, there's different ways you start piecing this all together. But here are some really good rules of something.
Based off of like your risk tolerance, or based off of your age, based off of all of that stuff.
And they're going to sit down and go over all of that with you. But I think the point that people need to take away from this is not more complicated than people think it is. People hear like financial advisors, or they hear like 401k or like numbers and taxes, and they're like, I don't know what's going on. It's like, well, you only know what's going on because you don't stop to actually pay attention to it. It's not that difficult when you actually just learn to invest into yourself first,
to learn how to
have
invest.
A cursory knowledge of what's going on, to learn how to invest and be able to have the conversation. Then you bring in the experts, so you actually are smart enough to be able to walk through that conversation with people, right? And so that's part of what we're bringing this podcast, is just to pause you and go, what does that monthly cash flow number look like to fund your lifestyle, right? Whatever that is. And I don't mean like, you could have like a yacht style lifestyle, that's fine. I mean, like, let's start with, I'm very clear in this. I mean, sure, we're making a lot of money as an organization, but I would trade if somebody said, hey, you know what, I'm going to take away the amount of money you're making and I'm going to pay you X, but you can have your time. I would take X all day long and learn how to live off X in a heartbeat.
I would too, depending on what X is.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. I mean, yes, maybe if it's like 10 grand, I'm just being reasonable.
Yeah.
And that's why I think what's really important for people to realize while they're doing this process is, as you earn more money, because most people are in the phases where they're earning money right now, and they're trading time for money, and you're earning it through your employment, through side hustles, whatever you're doing, equity if you have some in companies, all of those things, profit bonuses, you're earning income. Instead of increasing your lifestyle proportionately, or I'm sorry, to like increasing your lifestyle to the exact amount that you're making again now, keep living off of the same lifestyle and take all of that extra money and put it away. So then you're putting it, or at least the portion of it. So,
and what percentage?
Yeah. So what I'll get to this is we had a really pretty awesome advisor come on to one of our Project U calls, who invests in, he's deals with like million to like $20 million investors. And so he deals with a lot of very educated people, and he's worked his way up and dealing with everybody to wealthy people. And one of the things he said, he goes, first of all, there's two things that I took away from his presentation that he's done with me for the last decade too. Mm-hmm. And he said, number one is, if you're not saving enough to the point where it's painful, you're not saving enough.
That stuck out to me a lot.
And it's like, oh, meaning that like you go, oh, I could save $10, and it's almost like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's saying
about 1,000.
Yes.
And then you're like,
ooh, that's painful, yeah. Right? It's like, it's going to cause me to not be able to do what I want necessarily right now, discretionary wise, but it may force you to go do something else. It's the exact same situation Sarah and I were talking about with our kids' with iPads. All of a sudden, since we gave them a time that they could have, when they're no longer on it, they figured out other really cool things to do.
Right. And I bet the time that they are on the iPad, they're enjoying
it
more.
Exactly. Instead of just having like, it's just such a great experiment with kids. They're fun to experiment with, right? Yeah. And so instead of having this open time that we kind of just let them do that, now they have a 2-hour limit. They know what it is. They're managing it, but they're also enjoying the time more, and they're finding other things to do. That's my point is, if you just say, well, I won't be able to take that big trip over to there. Well, you know what? Maybe you go camping and have one of the best vacations that we had. And I've shared this with Hallie before. Was like a $700 a week, like tenting experience that we had. It was awesome. It wasn't in like this fancy place. It just happened to be open. And it was wonderful, right? Yeah. Sure.
Or if you really still want that trip, then you just get really creative.
Yes.
In other areas to be able to pay for that.
Our point with that is, put more stock in the experience than the actual amount of money you're paying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so just, but people want to do the other. They want to say, oh, I'm paying all this money to do this wonderful trip, but yeah, I can't really afford it, but I want to tell everybody I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, you want to put it on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I get it. Yes, I like Instagram
exactly,
too.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you're coming back, so the earned income that you're bringing in, the average American, I believe, saves about 5 or 6% of their income through some 401k or whatever the metric that they have there. Right. You don't want to be average. If you're listening to this, you don't want to necessarily be average. I'm not belittling anybody's amount of money that they're saving.
Right. Just, you do need to start somewhere.
You need to start, right? I think that 10% is a really good goal, good starting position. 15% is really is stellar. Mm-hmm. And then what, like our guy said to us, he goes, if you can get to 25% of your income in savings, he's like, that's the gold standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically you round numbers, if you make $100,000 a year as a family, $25,000 is painful.
Right.
But you save it and then watch how much money. I just saw this in my own, when I first started out, I mean, maybe even 11 years ago now, I think I was putting $500 a month away. I didn't believe in putting it like it was basically, I look at like, For people that are listening to this and you have disposable income, right? A large amount of disposable income. I'm not saying like millions. I'm saying like, you know, you're making $150,000 more a year. You have a lot of disposable income.
Absolutely.
And if you don't, you should look at your lifestyle first, right? Yes. So then.
Remember that example?
Yes.
Yes. I don't remember.
It was in Forbes.
It was in Forbes of this family who collectively made, I think it was about $400,000.
It was 500 grand a year.
500 grand a year. And they had almost 30, they had nothing left at the end of their year.
They put 30,000, I think, into their 401k every year. Mm-hmm. They kind of maxed out their 401ks.
Yes.
It was 30 or 40,000, but then they had like $6,000 left at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And they took, it was a family of four making $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
A lot of money. And then they took like, I think it was like 1,000 people that they looked at their tax returns or however they studied it.
Yeah.
And they came down, the average was about $6,000 left over.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, it's
it just meant that they were living.
Well, they had a, like they the had, edge of their I remember it was they had 1,100, they each had two $1,100 car payments.
Yeah.
They had like a boat payment.
Yep.
They, or some sort of extracurricular thing.
Which
like
I feel
an
like
RV.
They didn't use. Or
yeah,
something.
They didn't use whatever it was. They had high house payments.
Yes.
They spent a lot of money on private schooling, and I'm not taking anything away from that. Like that could be a priority, but that's fine. But combined with everything, they literally had like $6,000 or $7,000 left over. We taught that to them. I'm like, look, this is just the facts of how people are living. Mm-hmm. So that's the point. Like you don't necessarily need that. And you go, Mr. Money Mustache, who's got a family of, I think he had four, living off $30,000 a year, feeling amazing, right? I have an aunt, by the way, and I think who lives in a yurt. I'm not even joking.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? Yes. Oh. My aunt Jeannie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen her for a while, but she comments every now and then. But
in Vermont?
No, she's in...
I'm like, that would be really hard to live in a yurt in Vermont.
She's in Colorado, though.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, I think she's in Colorado. And she lives in a yurt. And she's lived in there for, I don't know, 20 years. I don't know how much money she makes, but my guess is it's not much. It's probably much less than $30,000 a year. I could be wrong, but that's most likely. They have goats. They raise all their own food, all their own milk. When she came and visited our family like a couple years ago, she slept in a tent outside because she didn't want to get used to sleeping in a house.
Wow.
I mean, it was aggressive, but I love her position.
Yeah.
She wasn't doing it to like, look at me,
no,
put me on Instagram.
Clear on how she wants to live.
Yeah. She's very clear that she loves her lifestyle. And then I look at other people who are making $500,000 sweating, this going, I would never want that lifestyle, but I'm going, that person's pretty damn happy.
I got a question for you that might be slightly off topic, but I just feel like I need to ask it. Do you think it's easier for us to have these conversations about how money isn't going to bring us happiness and we don't need all this money because we have been comfortable but in our lives? And so it's kind of easy to say, oh yeah, now that I've had it or I've acquired all this stuff, I don't need it.
I think if you are living in poverty in a third world country, then this conversation changes. I think you need some sort of shelter and water. However, I say that I was in Tanzania in the villages of people living in there. And everyone who goes there, pretty much everyone goes there, says the same thing. I sat and watched kids. In fact, I played with them, who had a ball duct taped up, and they were the happiest kids that they could be.
Right. And you know, I'll challenge that a little bit. I'm just like, what did their health care look like?
I'm just saying in that current moment that they were living, they had more happiness and joy than a lot of times my kids did.
Right. Yeah.
Just because their kids are fighting over something.
But you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
That's almost an extreme example, but
it is, but I'm just trying to, that's why we're trying to use data. I think that our culture, society wants us to think that money is going to bring us some level of joy or playing this linear life of like, keep getting and getting and gaining and gaining. Mm-hmm. And it's going to give you more joy. And I think people who look at this, who don't have it, could easily say, yeah, but you have it. It's easy to say that.
Yeah,
however, at some point, isn't that what wisdom is trying to actually go through something, whether it's a success or a failure, and saying it doesn't work.
Yeah, and but that's, I'm like, okay, let me get the $3 million.
Yeah, and people always say that. Yeah, and
I'll
go do that.
Or not,
if that's your thing, then go do it.
Yeah.
But you know, we had an example. I had somebody that's very high up on our leadership team, and their family made 7 figures, and it was a big jump for them. And basically, they were sat down with me and said, "Hey, you know, my life's the worst it's ever been." As simple as that. And they were like, look, Well, worst ever been. It's somewhere around difficult. That long. Very difficult. Never thought it'd be like this. And they said, you know, I've been listening to you for years and that whole money thing. And I finally get it.
But would he have gotten it if he didn't, if they didn't make that much money? That's kind of my point.
Like, now they're like, you know, they're going, how do I explain this to other people so they don't get caught in this? I go, sometimes you got to let people do it.
Because I give them $1 million.
Yeah, if people don't want to go out, that's the worst because it's like lottery winners, right? At least they've earned it, right? Yeah. But if people don't go out, if people need to say like, hey, I'm going to go do this, then go do it. Just go do it. Just go. What I want you to do then, if you want to go do that, you're saying, I don't buy into this, I'm going to go do it. Fine, go do that. I get it. I was there, right? Then go say, all right, I want you to pick a number, 100, 200, 500, a million. Every time you get to this, you tell me how much better you feel. Mm-hmm. That's all I want you to do. And you can start, and maybe it's at 50 grand to 75. Mm-hmm. Go tell me how much better you feel when you get to 75.
Right.
And remember that though.
Do you think the data is about after 75? Yes. It doesn't change.
Mm-hmm. It's very minimal. It's like less than 1%.
Yeah.
So the data is there, but people are like, I don't visually feel it. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't visually.
It's the menu and the meals. Sometimes yes, you have to experience it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to tell anybody not to go make money. Go do it.
Yeah.
But what I want you to do is set up these metrics.
Right. And so, at least be paying attention.
Paying attention.
And being aware.
How much better do you feel when you're at 150,000?
Right.
How much better do you feel when you're at 250? Right. Tell me how much better you feel. It's like the old Zen kind of quote. It's like the only Zen that you have, the only Zen that you can find at the top of the mountain is the Zen that you bring there. The only joy you're going to find through money is the joy that's already inside you. Mm-hmm. And it's the same type of thing. But I get it. Go out and do it, but set metrics up. So wherever you're at and you want to get to this next goal, I want you to make sure you remember when you get there, because you will. If you're thinking like that, you'll probably get there. Fine. Great. Maybe in a years when you get there, I want you to pause and reflect. How much better is my life right now? Just ask that question. And I don't mean externally. Mm-hmm. I mean being real and authentic, going, how much more joy is really in my life? And just ask that question. And then if it's there, just go to the next one. There's nothing wrong with going out and getting those things. Just don't ever mistake that any of those, that dollar amount that you're going to get is going to change how you feel inside.
Right, right.
It's not. It's not going to. It's fun. It's amazing. So that's a wonderful question, because I know people sit there and say that. I actually heard Oprah say that before. And like, people sometimes say to me, like, oh, Oprah, it's easy for you to say that stuff. And she's like, I know. And I just try to say, then go do it. Mm-hmm. And we're just trying to, wisdom, right? I think wisdom is taking somebody's advice or models or systems before you've felt the actual experience of it. Because once you feel the experience, now it's your wisdom. Mm-hmm. In the case of that example is like, oh, we've made this money and I get what you're saying, cause I feel it now. Or like a kid, I used to use the example of a kid walking over to a fire who's never touched a fire before. And you're going to say, don't touch the fire. And they're going, what do you mean? Don't touch the fire. And they go touch the fire. And all of a sudden they have their own wisdom. Now they realize what it was like to touch the fire, cause they felt it.
Well, it's just knowledge and intellectual knowledge before you experience it.
Yeah. It's that visceral conscious contact with the experience.
Wisdom.
Yes. It's like you read the menu and it sounds really good until you eat the meal and it's not good anymore, or it is good, right? When you eat the meal, you now have the knowing of what that is, right? But that's why I think people can have that knowing now. I think people can go out there and use, they don't have to reach a certain number to have the knowing. I think you can look back on your life right now and saying, how much money did you have in college? Right? How much money did you have? And yes. And how much money did you feel that much better than you were in college in terms of your happiness? And then some yes or no for people based on external situations.
I was gonna say, sometimes Bill and I talk about our like college days when we first were, you know, we're dating and we're like, our life was amazing. And now there was some rough years in there.
Yes.
When we're striving.
Yes.
And trying to get things. And then now we've kind of come back on the other side and because we've done a lot of personal work and inner work, and now we're almost like back to where we were when we had nothing.
Nothing. Yeah, exactly. That's the point. That's why I'm saying you already have that knowledge in you. You've just bought into this self or the ego saying in the culture of life of just about 99% of virtual all America, of pretty much people worldwide, right? Save the poorer countries. But when people get into there, they're going literally like, I just need to, you get so culturalized into thinking that, but you just go look back into, I even think back sometimes when I was 10 or 11 playing outside, I didn't have any money. My parents had no money. We lived in a small thing. I'm like, we had just so much fun doing those things.
We had an amazing childhood and I thought we were like rich.
Yes.
And now as an adult, I realized we not have any money.
And then somebody goes like, well, that's great guys. It's there. And I just put myself in the audience years of going like, but I have all these responsibilities. And then what I say to people, I go, you have all these responsibilities because you forced your lifestyle to increase before you could actually support it.
How do you, what is the answer about like kids though? That's not necessary.
Well, no, it is. I mean, you have kids that are doing that, right? It's a responsibility, but how much money do you really need to actually invest into kids?
I don't know.
I mean, $1,000, $1,500 a month, you know, max for food and all those different things. So you may have to drop your car from a $800 payment to a, to buying a car that's $10,000 cash to be able to do it. Right. And somewhere along those lines, you get my point. You can, one of the exercises we always do in part of you, I said, you know, what would it look like in your life to live off $1,000 a month? I said, I'm not saying you need to go do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you're going to go do it tomorrow, but what would you have to do in your life to go do that? And the answer, everyone can always come up with the answer. Yeah. They go, well, I could sell my house. I could do this and I could just buy like a mobile home or nothing wrong with mobile homes. And just saying like, we could do that, right?
I would move in with my parents.
Yes. You can move in your parents. You could get a roommate to come in there to start paying for different things. Totally. You don't have to sell your house necessarily, but all of a sudden people go, oh, they get on this tangent. They go, I could do this. And I go, yeah. Would you have any more stresses if you're living off $1,000 a month? And they go, well, no. I go, well, so then you just caused all the stress in your life because of you trying to increase your lifestyle before you could really afford it. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes this game of, I need to protect it. That's why the whole thing of need nothing, enjoy everything. Because if you need something in your life, then you have to protect it. And then you feel insecure when it feels like it's threatened or being taken away, which is then why people put pressure on their businesses or themselves to earn a certain amount of money. So none of that gets threatened. And it's just like, you caused all of this problem. We're going deep into this conversation.
I was gonna say, we kind of went down this path of not needing money.
Yes.
And yet we also want to encourage people.
But you
want to
enjoy everything too. Yes. So that you're already earning money, you're doing it. So that's my point. That's the point of this, is that know what your number is monthly and then work backwards to start figuring out how much money you need annually coming from whatever sources you can start building a plan on. There's a bunch of different ways. I think investing in real estate is one of the greatest ways to do it. You know, you can have money in the stock market or an index fund. That's relatively pretty easy to be able to do that now with low cost fees and a lot of different brokerages that are out there. You could invest into books, side hustles, any of those things. You just create your plan for what that looks like and you build it out over the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years, right? Then you should make sure that you're saving somewhere between 10 and 25%. Mm-hmm. It's painful and you may not be able to do it today. You may say, I need to get rid of some payments. Like you may have to make some tough calls in your lifestyle to get back there. But I promise you, the freedom of having money will trump any feeling of having anything.
Yeah. I think it was a couple of years ago that Bill and I, although I need to go back and look, cause I think we had a little bit of an expense creep happening over the past couple of years. I got to go back, but we've basically decided to live off just one of our incomes so that we can save and invest everything else. Now that did not happen overnight, but it started off as investing $100 and then eventually it is living off of one income.
Yeah. But part of your expense creep is cause you can pay in cash.
Yes.
I mean, so when people have to finance luxury, and luxury isn't vacations or nice cars. Like luxury can be, if you have to finance something outside of your house without some more of my money down, like you're not waking up going, where's my money going to come from? You're not stressed out about money trying to figure it out because you actually live way below your means.
Not anymore, but yeah, I mean, it took a while to get there. Yes. Yeah.
But you did, but you created a plan. And then when you and Bill both started making more money, you didn't increase your lifestyle proportionately. You actually kept it where it was.
Right.
I mean, you guys could go out and build any home that you really wanted to for the most part, right? But you even said like...
But I don't even want the stress.
That's what you told me. I was going to use that example. But you sat down to me and said, I just don't want it. I don't need anything more.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's the point. You don't need it. And then, you know, if it happens to come and it comes, right?
Yeah. I'd rather have time.
Exactly.
Like
yes. Yeah. I would take that time all day long. So then it comes back to is don't get yourself caught up into long-term contracts that you have to pay that forces you to lose your time. Because that's what people want, right? And it goes back to the whole thing of like, you know, with families, like people are like, I care. Like I always have a question. What do you value most? So my kids. And then you're going, but I have to go work for my kids. And I'm going, no, you're working for your lifestyle, not your kids. As the people are real with themselves, you're working for your lifestyle, not your kids.
Right.
Because if that's really, and you may say, well, work's more important, right? In terms of that aspect that I want to go build something, you may go allocate 20 hours a day to doing that. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. That may be your dharma, right? To do that. But if you're saying spending time with my kids matters more, then you just need to figure out what that actually looks like. And then getting real with yourself about what you need to change in your life to actually get you more time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So remember, what's your number? Work with your partner on this. Work with yourself on this. Find a financial advisor, a fiduciary financial advisor that's going to walk you through these things. And then start building a game plan out. And then starting tomorrow, take action on this. Make sure you take some dollar amount off the table every month. If you just want to start, you can just open up a traditional some sort of brokerage account, 401k, IRA. There's a bunch of different options you can do there really easily. It just transfers directly from your paycheck. Hey, before you jump off today, we talked a lot about investing, talked about the kind of nuances of investing. But if you're sitting there going, you know, I want to invest in real estate, but like Hallie, like you don't really want to. Actually, a lot of top agents across the country have come and invested into BlackRock projects. We have 50 plus million in projects that we're building out over the next couple of years with annualized returns somewhere between 12 and 25%, depending on the risk profile and the property that you invest into. So, and we have a lot of money to fill, so there's not really a dollar amount that's necessary there. But if you're interested in just learning a little bit more about what it would look like to invest into real estate, you can go to www.blackrockus.com. And then if not, just email us. We'd love to put you in touch and have a private consultation on there.